Well, we're so glad to have you back with us today. Another big GoldSeek.com radio episode and our featured guest, institutional advisor, editor, and chief investment strategist of Charts and Markets. Welcome back, Bob Hoy.
Hello there. And it's good to be with you, Chris. You've always provided a lively show, and it's fun to be on. You know, I tell people that on an interview show, it's like playing tennis. You got to have somebody to lob the ball back. You do a good job.
I appreciate that. So start off the discussion with this interesting story. Little known. It's not even in the headlines. It's the last page of the Wall Street Journal. It deserves, I think, a little bigger billing, and that's 10 million% inflation in Venezuela. $1 now costs $100,000. So let's say you wanted to buy a loaf of bread for $2 or $3. All you need are $300,000. Of course, that's a bit of a stretch because we're talking about bolivars. It gives folks an idea, and you've got an interesting comment.
It's an act of desperation, the inflation. First of all, they want to pay themselves, so they start printing. And the disaster in Venezuela is actually instructive because it's happened so fast, like in about 20 years, of central planning. And when you come in with central planning, it screws things up, and then people become a little more dissatisfied. The economy's not doing so well. Government revenues through taxation diminish. So then they do more central planning, and it's a dreadful feedback mechanism, and it's a classic pattern. They're doing the same as that Zimbabwe did, and of course, the classic in a leading European economy was the Weimar Republic inflation in the 1920s, and also, if you look around, you'll find that France at the same time was doing the same thing.
Yeah, we normally think of Hungary, Czechoslovakia, especially of the former communist bloc countries, but I didn't know France, because they had suffered so severely centuries of inflation. The original inflation, although I guess, yes, you can go back to China and Greece and Rome, but to me, the original somewhat modern example begins with France.
Beginning in 1790s.
Because they had a whole century there that led up to helping us out, and as you know, and early on in our revolution, because it was primarily financed by France, 100 million livres.
Called the continental currency, and that horrendous inflation. And older folks, now I'm old, but even my mom.
Not worth a continental.
Worth a continental. You don't hear it now, but that was... And nobody knew then, I think, knew what it meant. It was just something was worthless. It wasn't worth a continental. But maybe 100 years earlier than that, they knew in the States that it was that horrendous inflation. So, but those things are both compulsive and intentional. The government is destitute and needs money, so it prints it. And then it runs through a course where eventually the disorder... And the whole experiment collapses. And that was the case in Rome in the latter part of the 3rd century, right out to 300. And then Constantine came in and put the system back on the gold. So the inflation game was over. So it's always a pattern. And then a Greek writer, Aristophanes, in a play called The Frogs, wrote out what inflation was all about. So, whereas now I've been in the market so long, Chris, that I've been through the delusionary part about inflation where, and I'll take this right back. It was 1965. I was in the research department of Canada's premier investment dealer, and they were the big power in the bond market. And this then, in Canada and the U.S., the rate of inflation of the CPI was at getting up to 1%, which was getting concerning. So I was naive, and I had a meeting with the senior vice president of the bond department. With this inflation, if it gets any higher, that's really going to kill the return on the coupon and also mark the price of the bond down. And this very senior gentleman said, yes, Bob, you're right, but inflation only happens in lesser countries found in South America or Europe. He said that Canada and the United States has too much integrity to go to inflation.
I've heard similar arguments. It could never happen here because we have such an intense and strong and solid bond market. But, you know, let's take a look at Italy outside of, I guess, Northern Europe. It had probably the strongest bond market in all of Europe. Inflation still remains a threat there. But I would like to clear one quick thing up here for folks. We're not quite at 10 million. The IMF is calling for 1.4 million, and the author of this article is calling for 10 million, but we're on track in Venezuela. We have 32% now inflation, which to me is the heels of galloping slash hyperinflation in Argentina, their neighbor. Brazil is now starting to show some signs. So you see, this currency crisis mess tends to be contagious.
From lesser country to lesser country, but you got to look at the senior economy and the senior currency, which is U.S. and the dollar. In order to get the price inflation that these lesser countries have suffered, you would literally have to destroy the whole bond market, and before you would go to actually printing. Now, you've had inflation through currency and credit issue, but we're in a pattern now where the opportunity to inflate anything is coming to an end in the senior currency. Now, I'll go through the pattern, is that you have a long period of economic expansion, with rising global commodity prices, and then that ends with a huge speculative surge. One of the greatest was 1920. And then out of that crash, you had the guys at the Federal Reserve were very worried about weak wholesale prices. So they Fed was unusually easy through the mid-1920s, looking over their shoulder at very weak prices and not understanding inflation in financial assets. And even today, there's very few people understand it. So at any rate, a natural financial mania developed and blew out, as we all know, in September 1929. So then you had the hard crash and then the long contraction. But, Chris, that was number five in that pattern. The first was, let's go back to London, where by the late 1600s you had enough companies that were publicly held and traded, so you could call it a stock market. In 1692, you had the first financial market letter published in London, and 1694, you had the Bank of England, a bank of issue. So the modern world had arrived by 1700, and you had a huge commodity boom, 1711. And then you had a setback, and then out of that came speculation in financial assets with the South Sea Bubble, 1720. And then you had a long contraction. So the pattern is quite recognizable. A great bubble in commodities, then in financial assets, and then you get the contraction. So let's put it in another way, that while tangible assets are going up, the public hoards tangible assets and commodities. That ended in 1980 and set up a new financial era, which began in 1982 and it's continued. But within this, you also had that huge commodity boom in 2008, when crude was up to 147 and commodity indexes were at the highest they'd ever been. And 9 years later, the time from that peak in commodities to the peak in the stock market in January. Now, that's when global stock markets peaked and the New York Stock Exchange composite peaked in January. That was 9 years and 7 months. Then also the commodity index by a month, by the monthly post, is available for 1920. And that boom from the peak in commodities in 1920 to September 1929 ran for 9 years and 5 months. So the timing is remarkably close. Now, with the bubble commodity boom in 1864, I couldn't find a commodity index plotted by month. But 9 years later, you had the great commodity boom, or the great stock boom of 1873 blew out and crashed, and you were followed by a lengthy contraction. Now, here's where you then had a sophisticated economic community then, and England was the senior economy, and the contraction was continuous and unusually weak. So senior economists in England in 1884 started calling that one the Great Depression, and it lasted till 1896. But it's interesting, is when I was going through all those economic history, is that senior economists in England were still debating how the Great Depression of 1873 to 1896 could have been prevented as late as 1939. And then we've got another depression here now. So the economic literature on financial matters is quite interesting. So anyways, what we're looking for now is that this seems that the recent financial mania blew itself out in January and in setting new lows recently with exchanges all around the world. The bear market has been set, and in which case you're going to have serious deflation in the senior currency terms. Now, here's the other thing from financial history, is that in every post-bubble contraction, the senior currency has become chronically strong against most other currencies and most commodities for most of the time. That's just the way it works. So the line that I used, Chris, when I was just first starting to go to financial institutions in our presentation was slides, and it included one that said, no matter how much the Fed prints, stocks and bonds will outperform commodities. And in 1982, that was highly controversial because the fund managers then had only finally figured out that inflation was caused by the Fed. And but then this is the part, as I said, very few people understand what inflation in financial assets means. And you had, like, the gold community with the boom out to 2011. It was $1,900 gold, and the real price of gold was going up. Stocks were going to the moon. And yet most of them would say, oh, the price of gold is suppressed by the government. And then we had all our technical stuff saying, hey, the top of the market, just like gold and silver in 1980, and that it was dangerous, stuff like that. So, but at any rate, within this big pattern is when you have a financial bubble, a mania like we've been in, gold's real price goes down, which it has done, and gold stocks underperform, which they have done. And then out of this, once we're through the beat up here in the stock market, which it became quite oversold recently. And there could be some relief for a month or so, but generally I think we're in a bear market. So out of this comes a great bull market for gold stocks, not because of inflation, but because of deflation, whereby most commodities and wages and costs fall relative to the price of gold, so the gold miners make money. Chris, this is phenomenal how this pattern keeps recurring, and I'm highly confident that it will continue the basic pattern where we will go into a great bull market for gold, but it won't be the old 1970s recipe whereby the Fed is evil, gold's going to go up, stuff like that. So where in 2011, gold pundits were calling for $10,000 gold. What has happened is that stocks and bonds went to the equivalent of $10,000 gold, you know what I mean? And this is where the play has been, and now that it's rolling over, the exciting part for the precious metals is ahead of us, and I'm sure we can get the entry point on it. But to get the idea of deflation is you want to look at the great gold rushes in history. You had California in 1840s, which was a depression bottom. So high unemployment, men not working. And you also had the price of gold in real terms high. So when you make a gold discovery, the world goes crazy. Now then, the next depression bottom, as I said, was 1895, 1896, when the gold's real price was high and global unemployment was high. In a depression, people are out of work. So then when a gold discovery is made, if you get this huge rush, people go there. So that, then you had in the late 1890s, you had the Klondike, and you also had gold discoveries near Melbourne in Australia. So there's a long-term pattern there. Actually, I remember now that the first gold rush in a depression was in the 1690s, and it was in Brazil, the Preto Ouro gold rush. So, Chris, we're going to have a gold rush, but it hasn't started yet, and it'll take a number of years there. So we will have rising gold stocks, and there will be junior exploration stocks. There will be discoveries. And the fun part of it is that the stock market will recognize this, and the gold stocks will become the premier game.
You've given us a lot of material here. We've covered an awful lot of bases. So try to just focus on the last part. I think the real takeaway here for the soundbite-focused listener, those of us with ADD, attention, or I guess it's ADHD today. But one of the key takeaways here was Bob Hoy likes precious metals equities relative to the overpriced, overloved, if you will, stocks and related stocks and shares that have been essentially priced to perfection in a world that suddenly we find out the emperor may not have remembered his underwear. That right there, I think, is one very important soundbite you've left with us, and it's a juicy morsel of cuisine for cogitation for our precious metals aficionados. Oh, what a wordsmith your host is today. Once again, that's at chartsandmarkets.com.
www.bobhoy.com, and it comes up.
Okay.
But just Google Bob Hoy, and you'll get it. As you know, Chris, and you can get in touch with us, Bob Hoy, just do bobhoy.com, bobhoy.com.
Bob Hoy, Institutional Advisor. We'll talk soon.
Good to talk. Bye-bye.